Merhaba l-semija ta' Campus FM, Emanuel Buttigieġ u l-jim għawċi jil-għawkom għal-episodju jħor ta' taħdita klio. U l-lumina u l-jim ha' morru f'qasam li mux familjari maħna, pero għu għet affaxxinanti ħafna wkoll, it-tempi preistoriċi ta' Malta, u ħanħarsu l-jom il-perspettiva tal-kosmoloġija u l-istilel. Pero li jemina u inti maħnix l-esperti fuq dal-qasam, pero għanna l-espert maħna.
Iva.
Għanna l-espert maħna. L-espert maħna huwa Tore Lumsdalen, huwa minn Norveġja, għax u ħadef diversi postijiet madwar id-dinja. Għamel MA fl-Università ta' Wales Trinity, St. David, u dal-aħħar kienet ukoll segwi dottorat mal-Università ta' Malta, appunto fuq din it-tema, fatt il-titlu ta' teżi tiegħu huwa Viewscape and Cosmology in the Prehistoric Temples of Malta. U issa fil-fatt ħanet għadu miegħu biex appunto niddiskutu dan is-suġġett affaxxinanti minn dal-angolu daqsxejn partikolari.
Ferm affaxxinanti.
Hello Ture, thank you for being with us.
Hello, thank you for inviting me.
So, a pleasure.
I've just briefly sketched out who you are and the title of your PhD dissertation. So I think we should start by you telling us a little bit, sketching out for us what your PhD dissertation was about and what is cosmology essentially and how does this link up to the temples?
Okay. The first question to clarify, I think it's that if they were temples, because they were built in the prehistoric time before the written language, and some can say that calling them temples are circumstantial, but today most scholars, archaeologists in Malta, I think would agree that they have a kind of ceremonial ritual status, and you have like late David Trump said meant clearly that they were temples as well. So I think one can, I call them temples all through my dissertation, my thesis, but I know some as well use temples with inverted commas, but okay, I call them temples because I think there is enough evidences how they are built and how they're laid out to be, because they were not living quarters, they were not not used for burials, so it seems to be clearly a ceremonial site. In all this we have to be very careful, and as my professor Kim Malville from America told me when I did my MA, was be careful. Whenever you're studying prehistory, one has to be very careful. So I don't let my modern eyes, my modern viewpoints dominate what might have taken place. That is, I think, is a general challenge for anything studying, especially in prehistory.
Absolutely.
So that's the one. And another thing is that these are very unique structures. There is nothing else like them in the world. They are the oldest freestanding megalithic monuments, as Lord Renfrew said back in 1980s, and that still is valid even after that Göbekli Tepe was discovered in the 1990s, which is probably 6,000 years earlier, but they're not freestanding like they have been, like they are built in Malta. And in that context, I think these temples, there has been done a lot through the Tourist Authority, Maltese Tourist Authority, and Heritage Malta, obviously, done a lot by visiting centers and promoting them, but I still think they should be much more promoted out in the world and also among in Malta, because most Maltese have heard about the temples, but they really don't know the true history of the temples.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I think that's a way to go. I think it's well, but it's still a way to go. Like everybody knows the way. the Egyptian pyramids. They know about Stonehenge. You need to say that, and oh yes, they know. But these temples, they are older than any of these sites. At least 1,000 years older, and they are so unique in the world, so they deserve any kind of attention they can get.
Tore, I would like to drag you out a bit before we go into cosmology.
Yeah.
So your choice for Malta was that these temples are so unique. How did this, let's say, interest in them come? Because it's very interesting for us and for our listeners to learn an expert like you becomes interested in these temples, which as you clearly say, they are not that world known.
Yes, well, that goes back to when I did my master's, and I did the master's degree in cultural astronomy and astrology at the university, which you mentioned in the introduction. When I was going to do my dissertation there, I wanted to do something, because I took a course at MA in called archaeoastronomy, which is then, let's say, the intersection between archaeology and astronomy.
Okay.
And then the lecture there, where I said, where should I do? I would like to do something in that. And there was this Professor Malvi from the Colorado University. He said, okay, why don't go to Malta? He suggested that. Okay. I was living in Italy, and I thought I'd do something in Italy, but I wanted to write it in English. So then, that was perfect. So I went down to Malta in 2010.
Okay.
And then I went to Nidra, and I happened to meet people back then, like Clyde Cortes, and then introduced me to other people, and I saw the first equinox sunrise at the Nidra at that time, and that fascinated me so much, and I said, this is where I want to do my dissertation, and I did my dissertation on that, and it was later published, which is a book, I don't know, but Heritage Malta is selling, or was selling, that book at least. because it's so unique, and you have this intersection between, let's say, the archaeology, these temples building, and then at the same time, you have this fantastic orientation towards celestial bodies, like Nidra, as many knows about the correct alignment of the equinox and the summer solstice and the winter solstice.
Mm-hmm.
And all this that engaged me into, it can't be made by chance. So correctly they are built. And started to read more into it, books like Multiple Folk History or David Crump's book, and then you saw this, where they say that they were so sophisticated as well, the construction, the architecture. It was it was not just by put up. So it's a tremendous engagement behind the person who built this, both the one that organizing them and both that actually build it, must have a tremendous, there's nothing like this in the world.
And I think segues therefore now into your speciality, which is cosmology. And that really intrigues me, because I hadn't thought about the temples and cosmology. But perhaps you should tell us what you understand by cosmology, first of all.
It is such a fresh outlook to our temples, especially for people like me and Manuel, who let's see from the inside to the outside.
Yeah. Yes. I when you talk about cosmology, there is different. In astrophysics, cosmology is the physical, how the universe functions physically. When we go to humanities and like in this case, archaeology, it's connected more up to, the cosmology is connected up to a worldview, a belief system. And And if we several well-known archaeologists, like the definition of Timothy Darwin, which I refer to, he defines cosmology as the worldview and belief system of a community based upon their understanding of order in the universe. And you have as well Parker Pearson has a similar definition of it, like the creation of order or construction of cosmology has been a feature of all human societies. And you have as well another one called in Richard, that's the monuments as a landscape, monuments as cosmology. So the thing is that if what most people today in the modern world, and this is what I wrote an article in Think back in September 2018, where that was the sky's role in archaeology. And then where President Howell wrote, and I'm paraphrasing, right, where he said that we know so much more about the universe than our ancestors. And yet it increasingly seems that they knew something more essential about it than we do. Mm. Something that escapes us.
Mm. That's a beautiful thought.
even the American astronomer Carl Sagan wrote in 1995 more or less exactly the same meaning as well about this. So, and we know that. We go out and people grew up in big cities, and probably some of them hasn't never seen an equinox or a sunrise or a solstice. Mm. So I think in Malta, you are much more fortunate, because anyway, you have some cities and collections, but you're fast out of a city and you're very soon into the open landscape. So the possibility to refer back to the sky is relatively available in Malta, because I think that the cosmology as well is connected up to a holistic worldview, and is connected up to that. Well, we live on the world, but we are a part of the universe. We are a part of the total sky, which is above us. And it doesn't mean that when it has an influence on us. It has an influence on societies all the way. We know for sure that all the way back to Mesopotamia and the Sumerians and the cuneiform script with their tablets, how engaged they were in the sky.
Yes.
And how that could influence the way of they were living. We don't know if that was the case in Malta, but there is strong indication that the prehistoric people, they had a very strange engagement in the totality of the universe they lived in.
What is the evidence archaeologically for this?
What is the
evidence archaeologically for this? So in the Maltese context.
Well, I think then you can. For the first, we have this in the Maltese the context that there were temples.
Yes.
So there was a ritual site. So there was. It had a kind of meaning in that sense, if we could call them temples, and we refer, at least we have to be careful so we don't.
Yes, of course, of course.
Modern mind, but if there were temples and were used for a kind of rituals or ceremonies, which has been proposed by many archaeologists.
Yes, of course.
Then you have as well this alignments, orientation towards the sun,
okay,
in the first place, which we see in Nidra, or you have as well towards the the winter solstice sunrise, which you find basically in all extant hotels we have today, the hotel that remains. And this is so precise, so it must have been, it must have had an influence, either for keeping track of time, like in Nidra, okay. Which is Nidra is probably the oldest structure that one can refer to
as a calendar
or let's say keeping track of time.
Okay, keeping time.
Not to confuse it with a calendar, because it was Paul Nicolet in 1990 who used the word Nidra, calling it a calendar, no? Megalithic
okay.
calendar.
Okay.
But it was Professor Ventura and George Argyros that in 1980s had really started on an academic level to research the temples, and they found out this precise orientation they had towards
the sun and yes.
Yeah, and the celestial there. And you had as well a good friend of mine, Mario Vassallo from IMJAR, who has written many articles in Times of Malta about these alignments as well. So and then if you bring this in, because the thing is, one can't start to work out from the astronomy and say, okay, this is an alignment. One has to start to work it out from the archaeology, and then see what that brings.
And that is what I wanted to ask you. So this idea of the alignment of these temples, how does it reflect in the society of these prehistoric people who were living on this island?
Well, here we go back again to what Lord Renfrew mentioned once back in the 1980s again, that there was a chiefdom society.
I see.
And that has been discussed a little, and one has. But one seems to be, even the one arguing against calling them chiefdom society might say they could have been a priestly class.
Okay.
Let's call them temples, priestly class. Anyway, whatever it was, in the times, if you go back to 4,000 to 6,000 years back and building these temples, and I have registered 35 temples in my temple sites because some of them doesn't exist anymore. And probably then I have a question about there might be 15 to 20 others. And so it might have been, and we don't know how many of these sites could have been under Valletta or Slima or
of course
Medina and all these places. So it has been, and one is estimated to be around 7,000 people living in Malta at that time, and then building all these temples. Mm-hmm. And so perfect, so this construction. So there must be an enormous drive behind this. So, and that must, somebody must stand for that. And if it was a priestly class or an organizational class,
it doesn't
class
make a difference.
Whatever
it's still
it was,
a drive.
Yes, yeah. So well, that, and I think that was, well, I think it started because the first inhabitants came from Sicily, and that was, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 little change the thing there, but that's a long time before the temple period, and they might have left in between again. And then in the temple period, which started, let's say, about 4,000 before Christ, and lasted for about 1,500 years until the Bronze Age. And then there was, it could be then a driving force in case there was a kind of religious into it, or they wanted to have this worldview, the cosmology, that building this temple would unite the population, the societies.
So, Tor, you said about 4,000 BC that it starts, this temple culture, lasts for about 1,500 years.
Yes.
I mean, that's astounding in itself. Isn't it? I mean, it's such a long time. I can't imagine anything else almost that has such a long story.
No, but in one way it's long, but on the other hand, it's always short. It's also short,
mm-hmm.
because at the beginning, and it's divided into temporal period, it's divided into two areas, the Gigantea period and the Tarsian period. And the Tarsian period was the short one. And then to start with this, the whole thing is, so it started based on a drive, a cosmological, a belief system, a worldview that they wanted to create. The one that started it wanted to create for the people living in Malta, so they can unite them through a kind of belief system, a cosmology. Mm. And then, after the temple period, it suddenly stopped, and the people coming after that in the Bronze Age, they didn't have the capacity to build these kinds of temples. They started to build the more easy dolmens and. No, so it was like a wow, and then punk closing down.
That's an interesting thought.
It is, and I think then, well, a little hypothetical, that it was the cosmology that was the initial drive to build the temples, because they wanted to have these to unite the society. And the temple period, there is no evidence of war or killing or being killed by stone axes or the skeletons, all that kind of thing that started in the Bronze Age.
So we're talking about a peaceful society.
Absolutely. As far as I see it, it was a very peaceful society until probably towards the end of the temple period. And then you might have something like you see today, people revolting against something.
I see.
Because that's when the time when you see that you might have fragmentation, destructions of some of these figurines and the big there and the burnings. Well, there is still a lot of research to be done on that. But
okay.
that could be as a scenario in all this as well.
We are obviously coming to an end of our conversation, Tore, and it is fascinating and to hear these ideas. I want to ask you one last question, which we can expand to. We have around 4 minutes left of our conversation. The importance of this to us is that we need to start looking at the temples or these structures in a different way. And that different way, how important should it be to our modern society, to a modern Malta? What is the role of this research for a modern Maltese society and for us that live on the island?
Yes, I think that it is the main thing here is that we have to look at the temples in a different way, like. That the temple and how they were located as well, because the temples were located in the inherent most visible part of the landscape, and they engaged in visual connection with the temples as well. So the temple structure was important in creation of an order and understanding of human relationship with the world and cosmos. These visual connections in the landscape and to the certain stellar bodies presumably gave the temple period society a cosmological meaning. So I think one has to, I'm sure they're respected, but perhaps even respect them more because they had, they lived in the in an entity, a holistic worldview with the university.
With the universe.
Lived in. They had to do agriculture to survive, but that was a part, the holistic worldview, what they lived in. I think that's one has to bring that in a better context than just to build the temples.
Fascinating.
Tore, we are looking forward so much to hearing much more of these ideas and we look forward to more information from your end, especially with publications about this, because the knowledge needs to be out there for the people to read and to understand this really holistic view that I think we should really start engaging in, especially as a society today, when we are constantly building different structures around us without any concern to the beauty and to the
landscape,
to the landscape, mm-hmm. Of the greater picture, that we are just one little dot on Earth, and Earth is a little dot in this whole universe that our temple period ancestors celebrated so much, and let's say they survived, their society survived much longer than our society, surely, especially when it comes to Christianity. But that's another argument for another time. Tore, once again, thank you for being with us. It was a brilliant conversation. We look forward to hosting you once again on our program. And on that note, I would like to bid farewell to our listeners. Once again, it's Liam Gauci and Emmanuel Buttigieg, and we'll meet you next week.